Hey there! If you like true crime stories and you love being in the great outdoors, you have come to the right place. I'm Tara, your host. Welcome to Crime Off the Grid. Hey, welcome everyone to Crime Off the Grid. I'm Tara.
And I'm Nancy.
So, hey, how's it going?
It's going great. Going great. How are you doing today?
I'm good, but I have a WWND question for you.
Okay.
So if you know WWND is what I say, what would Nancy do? Because, you know, sometimes we want to copy Nancy and her husband. So anyway, we want to copy you. So WWND, I know that you have been going to every national park, or that's, you've got the list of all the national parks and you're checking them off.
So we are.
We want to do that. Well, what's the last one you went to and what's the next one you're going to?
The last one we went to was in Nevada and it's the only national park in Nevada.
And it is?
Oh,
Great Basin.
Great Basin, yeah. National Park in Nevada. That's right. The one we went to.
Yeah, I was wondering if you did a detour to the Clown Motel. Have you heard about the Clown Motel?
I have not heard
about
the Clown
Motel. Well, I just
Motel.
Listened to a hilarious podcast by Sinisterhood about the Clown Motel. So anyway, we'll talk about that later, but continue.
Okay, and our next national park is going to be the Dry Tortugas
in Florida. Oh my gosh, I want to go there.
So yeah, pretty excited to go to that one here coming up soon. So it's going to be fun.
Oh, wow. Yep. Well, congratulations. Send us all
thank you.
Postcards. Hey, take some pictures by the national park signs if you go to any other national parks, and then send them to me and we'll put them out so people can see.
We will do that. We will definitely.
Unless you don't want to.
No, we take a picture of every national park.
Okay.
We take a picture of the sign, and then we take a selfie of Dwayne and I in front of the sign. So
yeah. Well,
it's pretty awesome.
We want to be like you. So this summer is we're going to start our adventure.
There you go.
Okay. Well,
where are you? Where are you going this summer?
This summer, the plan is
any
to go
national park
to the Olympic Peninsula. And what we can get on the way to the Olympic National Park, like Mount Rainier, maybe hit North Cascades and Crater Lake and that whole Northwest region. That's kind of our
goal.
That'll
be fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That'll be awesome.
So, all right. Well, the story we're going to talk about today is pretty intense and we probably need to put out a graphic warning. There are some details in this case that could be pretty upsetting to hear.
So in our story today, we are going to talk about the Hannah Anderson kidnapping. And I'm glad that you gave out that warning because this one made me mad when we were reviewing this
absolutely.
One. It was pretty tough. Mm-hmm. Yep. It was a murder, kidnapping, and a manhunt that riveted the nation in the summer of 2013. It was a week-long manhunt for Hannah's kidnapper that stretched from the Mexican border to northern Idaho, and even up into Canada. So the story begins with the discovery of a grisly crime scene in Boulevard, California. On a hot Sunday in August, the home of the Anderson family friend, his name is James DiMaggio, burned to the ground in a spectacular fire. Mm. And in the ashes, two bodies were discovered. One was Hannah's mother, Christina, and her 8-year-old brother, Ethan, and also the family dog. Police say Christina had been bound, gagged, and beaten to death with a crowbar.
Oh.
Both bodies were burned beyond recognition. Investigators found evidence in the rubble that led them to believe that DiMaggio had killed the two and the family dog.
Well,
then he set the home on fire with an explosive device that was connected to a timer to cover up the crimes. So immediately police and family, you know, an Amber Alert was put out, you know, at the time for Hannah and her brother, because they weren't sure if he had taken both of them, because they found, you know, Hannah's mother right away. So immediately, police and family members feared that Hannah's safety, that she had not been seen since cheerleading practice on Saturday. And she was supposed to get a ride home from practice from DiMaggio. So the Amber Alert came out, and some border agents reported seeing DiMaggio and Hannah in a blue Nissan driving through a checkpoint at the California-Mexican border. Yeah. So I think that's why it extended way down there for the Amber Alert to cover their bases. So while authorities in San Diego waited for DNA testing results to determine if the remains that were found in the scorched California home belonged to one or two children for which an Amber Alert was issued. So the children's father, he pleading with this guy. He's asking DiMaggio to surrender. He issued an emotional plea to DiMaggio asking that his teenage daughter was released. So at that time, they knew that the son had also been killed with his mother. And he said, "I'm begging you to let my daughter go. You've taken everything else." And then he said at a news conference, "Hannah, we all love you very much. If you have a chance, you take it, you run, you'll be found." So that's kind of the crux of what brought everybody together and all these agencies looking for her and the Amber Alert. Was they knew it was James DiMaggio that took her. So, you know, Terry, you kind of ask yourself, who is this guy?
Yeah.
You know, to do all this.
Yeah.
And the thing that even is even more strange is DiMaggio was best friends with Hannah's father, Brett. And he was even the best man in Christina and Brett's wedding. And their kids referred to him as Uncle Jim. And a family friend of the Andersons told ABC News affiliate that DiMaggio had a crush on Hannah, that she honestly believed that Jim had snapped and couldn't handle the infatuation that he had with Hannah. So it was also brought out that, you know, DiMaggio and Christina were in a close platonic relationship. You know, according to the sheriff's department, it wouldn't be unusual for her to be at his home with her children. And, you know, it wasn't unusual for her to be at the house along with the kids because they were just good friends.
Yeah.
And the kids called him Uncle Jim. So, you know, that they've been friends a long, long time.
Right.
So DiMaggio was last seen driving a blue Nissan Versa with California license plate, and it believed to be heading either to Texas or Canada, according to the California Highway Patrol. That's a big stretch of property,
A lot of places to look.
A lot of ground to cover. So authorities were very concerned that something had clicked to cause him to take this terrible course of action. And at this point, I think he's fully in. There's no turning back for him. Yeah, somewhere in his mind, he thought that he and Hannah would have a relationship and she would somehow fall in love with him.
Public service announcement. Hey, old men, the young girl is not going to like you. There's not anything you can do. No creepy
doubt.
Pictures you can text to make that young girl fall in love with you.
Exactly.
End of announcement.
I think the ability for him to get her away and to take her somewhere, he must have somehow thought he could change the situation.
Of course.
So, exactly. Because if it's just her and him, I mean, he's thinking he's got her all to himself. He can make it happen. And when they were growing, when the kids were growing up, you know, DiMaggio would run errands with the kids, especially Hannah. He'd take her to cheerleading practice and he'd shuttle her and her friends to different events. He was always available to help out the family. One of Hannah's friends that was talked to, she told investigators that he would unnerve Hannah with comments like, "If we were the same age, I'd date you."
That's nasty.
And the friend said she just didn't like to be alone with him. He creeped her out with his comments.
Yeah.
That would have creeped anybody out. I mean, a young teenage girl and somebody saying that to you.
Yeah,
that's just weird. But family friend or not, that's just weird.
Yeah.
So it was told that DiMaggio would pout if Hannah didn't pay enough attention to him. Which, you know, is like, wow. I mean, that's just disaster in the making, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this right here, this story right here is one of the reasons in my mind when our kids were younger, we never had babysitters. And largely because we lived in the middle of nowhere and there were no babysitters, but we didn't want them going overnight anywhere, even to people that we knew and we trust, because I felt like everyone is a pedophile until proven that they're not. And you really can't prove that they're not. So, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, that was just always, we just weren't around a lot of people that we could trust. But in this case, this was such a close family friend. There was no reason to ever distrust him, you know. I'm sure you would have heard about it if he'd made any advances before. Like, you know, if mm-hmm. I kind of look at people like, don't you be looking at my kid. But
yeah,
they would probably might have noticed something. I mean, in a lot of cases they don't. But anyway,
and we were the same. We were the same way. Yeah. I mean, kids had friends at school, you know. We wouldn't let sleepovers happen till we met the parents right. and knew a little bit about them, so that, you know, you don't want to just send them, you know, oh yeah, you're fine, go stay at little Jimmy's house, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah. It's the red flags, the hairs on the back of the mama's neck that can't stand up, right?
No, exactly. Yeah. But I can just see, you know, in this situation why they didn't have that issue, because this is way back to before, you know, they knew him before they had kids. And just anyway, it's got to be, I can't imagine the feeling of being at his house, being lured to his house where you've been so many times before. And my understanding was he had told them that, you know, he wanted to talk to them about some of his financial problems, but hey, while you're here, we can ride go-karts. So the family thought they were coming over there to, you know, talk to him, but also ride go-karts. And I can't imagine the feeling from the mother, Christina, as she's being bound by this person that they supposedly were able to trust.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, they're looking for motive, you know, for the murders and the kidnapping. And mm-hmm. so investigators cracked open DiMaggio's computer and they found emails to Hannah that indicated DiMaggio feared that Hannah was growing up too fast and growing away from him.
Wow.
And she wouldn't call him Uncle Jim anymore. And so that fear was real for him. And the FBI also learned that DiMaggio had purchased a blue tent and some other camping gear before he kidnapped Hannah. But as the weeks slipped past, none of these leads panned out and concern for Hannah's safety heightened. And before DiMaggio kidnapped her, he sent her a text message that said, and this is a ruse, just like it was to get Christina and Ethan to his place. And he said in the email or in the text that your mother asked me to pick you up from cheerleading practice. So he asked Hannah where she was going to be and the address so that he could pick her up. So, you know, Hannah gave him the address and said she would that day she would be inside the gym instead of out, you know, on the practice field. And, you know, she's not knowing. I'm sure this has happened 100 different times.
Right.
So, yeah. So he picked her up and he told her that her mother and brother were at his house. And so they were going to head that direction.
Yeah.
And as you said earlier, the mother, Christine, and Ethan were invited to the house again on a ruse and then told Hannah, you know, they're going to meet the rest of her family at his house. Well, when they arrived at DiMaggio's house, Hannah expected to see her family.
Right.
And this is a part that was strange to me. So DiMaggio told her that they were there, but he would not let her see them.
Yeah.
Which I thought, okay, how big is this house? I mean, that, you know.
Yeah.
So after, you know, Hannah was appeared like reading the articles, you know, she was pretty nervous at that time. And then he made her leave the house with him. And that's when he had rigged the house with the explosives.
Wow.
And it was on a timer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when they left, the house was just sitting there. So, you know, Hannah had no idea that her family was dead.
Right. Well, firefighters found the burned bodies of Christina Anderson and her six-year-old son, Ethan, of course, inside DiMaggio's home. Earlier, it was believed that they died in the fire or from as a result of the fire, but then it became pretty clear that they were tortured and killed before the fire went off. And both mm-hmm. bodies were actually placed under tarps. And so that partially burned into their flesh, showing that the tarps were placed over the bodies before the fire. And a crowbar sure, yeah. was found next to Christina's body.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog was found shot in the head in the garage.
Next to Ethan's body.
Yeah. Well, there was also some concern initially where some people and in some communities, some law enforcement communities and some just like social media type communities believe that Hannah was complicit in the deaths of her family. And, you know, by now everybody's, you know, they've seen the Amber Alert. They know about the fire and the deaths of the mom and brother. But they were saying things like, you know, somehow that she and DiMaggio were romantically involved. And so some were not even considering her a victim, that just that she willingly went away and was in cahoots with killing her family. For what purpose, who would know? So
right,
definitely yeah. some victim blaming going on here in some communities. Mm-hmm. By the way, I looked up the age of consent in California and Oregon mm-hmm. and Idaho just for fun. And the age of consent is 18 years old. So even if she was considered some Lolita, and culpable, it's still the adult who's responsible for violating, you know, the law, making it sexual assault. If there was sexual activity that occurred, it's still that adult man committing a crime, the crime of statutory rape.
Yeah, because she's 16.
Right. I did look up some states where it's a lot less than 18 or 16, and I'm not even going to comment about what those states are. I think we could play a game and guess.
Yeah, I could guess a few.
I was surprised about a couple I did look up. Anyway, that was not at all the case with Hannah, because as you said, that guy just creeped her out. And at some point in the investigation, officials found signs of handcuff boxes. I guess he went and bought brand new handcuffs, restraints, and things at the residence that were indications that she most likely was taken against her will. So they started getting some sightings of DiMaggio's car around the 7th, August the 7th. And so Oregon State Police say there was a possible sighting of his blue Nissan Versa in Northeast California near the city of Alturas. I think that's how you pronounce it. And shortly after the sighting near Alturas, California, the Nissan spotted again 50 miles away along the same highway near Lakeview, which is in South Central Oregon. So now you got a direction of travel, north and east. Now there was a possible big break in the case. There were four horseback riders who reported a possible sighting in the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. Let me tell you about the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. It is protected wilderness of steep, rugged mountains, deep canyons, wild whitewater rivers, the Salmon River Mountains, which are located south of the main Salmon and west of the middle fork of the Salmon.
It's the largest wilderness area, roadless tract of land left
Absolutely.
In the lower 48 yes. states. Mm-hmm. It's huge.
Yeah, and so the Salmon River Canyon is one of the deepest gorges in North America, deeper even than Grand Canyon of the Colorado River that runs through Arizona through the Grand Canyon. But it's not the same thing. Grand Canyon has steep walls, but the Salmon River just had these towering heights and mm-hmm. incredible landscapes visible from the river and wooded ridges, huge eroded monuments and bluffs and slides and picturesque castles and towers. The United States Congress designated the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness in 1980. And
it's 2.5 million acres.
Yeah. That's bigger than Yellowstone National Park, which is bigger than
it is.
Three sites.
Yeah.
And okay. One thing about the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness, it's smack dab in the middle of Idaho. So if you're in Montana or Wyoming and you're trying to get to Boise, you can't get there from here. You got to go way around, swoop from the south and up, or you go way up in Montana and come down. Because you can't go across the middle of Idaho, just saying.
Mm-hmm.
So the horse packers were this retired sheriff and his wife, and then another couple with them. And they set out on an excursion to do some fishing when, many miles into the wilderness, they see a teenage girl and an older man that seemed very out of place. And they reported that they seemed ill-equipped for wilderness. And the writers said there was this reluctance of the pair to engage in polite conversations or talk about their adventures. You know, like when you run into somebody that far in the backcountry, you don't just avert your eyes and keep going like you might on a sidewalk in a big city. I mean, they're the only other humans for miles and miles or days travel. And so they didn't want to make any kind of small talk. And you know, when you run into other humans, you might say like, how's your trip going? Doing any fishing? Seeing any wildlife? And then when you meet other humans, they also want to tell you everything they can about how they know that area. And have you been to the peak of that mountain? Well, I have lots of times. This is my fifth time. Have you ever fished that lake? I have a secret spot. So they just.
and then when you meet them on the trail, you got to step. The etiquette is you step aside
right.
to let the horses
through. Yeah.
So you know that they were in close proximity to right. each other. It's not like they were talking across the meadow or anything, you know. So
right, exactly. So, but they said they didn't really want to make eye contact and they barely spoke.
And in the way the young lady was dressed, I mean, pajama bottoms right. and beat up tennis shoes.
Right.
I mean, this is not what I wear in the backcountry, but
yeah, and they really noticed that and paid attention because nobody was wearing hiking boots and that far on a rugged, rocky trail. And they didn't seem to have other essentials on them, like rain gear that would be noticeable. And I don't think it was rainy during that time, but I think they later reported those pajamas might have been sweatpants. I'm not sure. So whatever she probably left cheerleader practice with is probably all she had.
Yeah, probably.
One of the things that really set off alarm bells for the riders, DiMaggio did manage to tell them that they were headed for the Salmon River, and the horseback riders didn't say anything to DiMaggio at that time, but they knew he was headed in the wrong direction. So either DiMaggio was just making up, you know, to throw them off of what he thought, you know, would throw them off of a location, not knowing where he really was and that was the wrong direction to the river, which he probably had no intention of going to the river. I don't know. But whatever it was clear he was being, you know, kind of suspicious acting.
Mm-hmm. And then they noticed fear in the teenage girl's eyes.
Right.
And I'm sure with that guy's law enforcement background, I mean, you can tell, you know, when someone fears for their life or they're scared.
Yeah.
And he noticed that, you know, in her eyes.
Yeah. Hey, did you ever see that movie, The River Wild, with Kevin Bacon and Meryl Streep?
I think if I saw it, I saw parts of it.
I think it might have been early 2000s.
I don't know if I saw the whole thing.
Well, it was Meryl Streep was this rafting guide and she was going down this river in the wilderness. And I actually thought maybe it was this river it was filmed on, but it turns out it wasn't. And Kevin Bacon was this bad guy and who must have been wanted. Yep. And he killed a ranger and then he hijacked the raft. And anyway, just researching the story and thinking about the area, the wilderness that they were in, really reminds me of that movie. And I got to say, I watch a lot of scary movies, but this movie really scared me. It stressed me out. So anyway, I don't want to be a spoiler. So go find it, how you can stream The River Wild with Meryl Streep. Huh. Well, the four riders had a second encounter with the girl and the man later, this time at Moorhead Lake, as they were getting ready to head back down the trail. They recalled seeing the girl soak her feet in the lake and again, avoiding interaction. So it wasn't until Thursday, August 8th, later in the afternoon when the horse packers actually got home. And then they saw the girl's pictures on the news, which was broadcast everywhere. I think it was nationwide search at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
they made the connection. So they immediately called the Idaho State Police, which that set off the investigation in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
So now on Friday, August 9th, the Idaho authorities located the Nissan Versa, which belonged to DiMaggio, at a trailhead mm-hmm. near Cascade, Idaho, in the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. And it was, I'm surprised they found it, but it was blue, I guess, and it was covered in brush. So they made this big effort, or he made this big effort, to try to conceal it. And I know
we don't have pictures of it, Tara, but the pictures that you and I saw, it's amazing that they found the car.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it was really covered.
Exactly. And he went to the trouble even to remove the license plate, but they figured out pretty quickly it was his. And mm-hmm. law enforcement learned that DiMaggio and Hannah had a blue tin, as you said. So they had that information. And one of the things that they learned from the writers was the man was carrying a house cat. So, okay, I'm just a squirrel here, but I don't think I could get my cat to travel with me that far into the wilderness. I mean, there's chipmunks and mice and birds and lots of things to distract. Oh. And I'm pretty sure he wouldn't be interested in following me. And
I agree.
He wouldn't tolerate being carried either. And then he wouldn't survive the cougars and the eagles or the coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, turns out that was DiMaggio's cat. Now, the problem for law enforcement was that the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness is as huge as we were talking about. And there are no roads, like you said, roadless tract of land. And it's full of ravines and raging rivers and arduous terrain. In other words, a really good place for a kidnapper to hide.
Oh, and, sure.
And by the time somebody might have seen them again, they could have been on the move in any other several directions. So mm-hmm. hundreds of law enforcement officers just flooded into now a newly established command center in Cascade, Idaho. And they were staging at the hiking trail, and anyone hiking that day, the next day, Friday, August 9th, they were stopped and questioned. And the last person who came off the trail, they said they saw a man and a teenage girl setting up camp high up in the mountains at Moorhead Lake. Now, the U.S. Marshal Service had a small plane at the command center, and early on Saturday, August 10th, they got up in the air to see if they could spot DiMaggio and Hannah near Moorhead Lake. So at first, mm-hmm. they didn't see anyone, and that was their search area, and they didn't see anyone. So they were about to turn back, but they're like, oh, we'll just make another pass. And that's when they were able to see a blue tent. And then he saw two people, and they could tell that it was a male and a female, and the female with blonde hair and a small animal. So then at that point, it is a pretty good guess that that was DiMaggio and Hannah.
And it was good that the FBI agent said, let's just circle one more time, because they might not have seen anything had they not tried, that last time.
Well, exactly. And so then they sent up an FBI plane with more sophisticated surveillance gear and confirmed mm-hmm. it was DiMaggio, Hannah, and a gray cat, just like the writers had told them.
That's a dead giveaway. The cat.
Yeah, there's a cat. Like, like I said, I wouldn't hike with a cat, but I'll hike with a dog, but not a cat.
Mm-hmm.
By 2 p.m., FBI SWAT teams boarded a Black Hawk helicopter, which was flown by Customs and Border Patrol. And the Black Hawk was actually too large to land where they strategically had hoped. So the rescue teams were dropped off on a ridge line with an elevation of about 6,500 feet above sea level. And it took them nearly 3 hours to hike 3 miles to the lake location. So they had to hike uphill in steep terrain. They got all their tactical gear and ballistic vests and helmets, food, water, weapons, all that stuff, which I know weighs probably another 70 pounds minimum, added to them. And so they mm-hmm. had extremely heavy loads while trying to make a stealth approach. So they certainly didn't want to be seen approaching their camp area. While the rescue team was moving into place, the aerial surveillance saw Hannah waving her arms at the sky as if signaling the plane.
And in fact, here, they said it looked like she was waving a white handkerchief almost to, hey, I'm here kind of thing.
Yeah. And at that time, DiMaggio was actually not right next to her. He was off collecting firewood. But I don't think mm-hmm. he was terribly concerned about airplanes and helicopters in the area necessarily, because It was August and fire season. It was somewhat smoky. There were fire suppression aircraft and recon flights going around anyway, somewhat frequently.
And, you know, in August in the West, I mean, there's fires all the time. Yeah. So, you know, you're from that area. That is nothing new for you to see in the month of August.
Exactly.
For sure.
So now on the ground, the FBI hostage rescue team was concealed nearby, and they're just waiting for the right moment to strike. They needed to make sure that there was a distance and a separation between Hannah and DiMaggio before they move in and effect the arrest. Because they didn't want Hannah to be close if there was gunfire, and they didn't want a more dangerous hostage situation. So his being to the side collecting firewood, being away from her, was really a good opportunity. And at this time, the light was starting to become kind of a factor. Like, it was after 5 p.m. and it would potentially be dark, you know, within 2 or 3 hours easily. So once DiMaggio moved back into the woods to get more wood for the campfire, the agents moved in. And according to reports, DiMaggio held up his gun and shot one or two times. Some reports were that he fired into the air, then lowered his gun, which appeared to be pointing in the direction of the rescue team. So the hostage rescue team opened fire, hitting DiMaggio with 5 shots and killing him. Now at the campsite there, another helicopter was brought in to whisk Hannah off to the hospital and get her away from that scene. And one of the first things Hannah asked was, could she see her mother? She wanted her mother, and she didn't know that her mom and little brother had been killed.
Right.
So an FBI victim specialist and an FBI child forensic interviewer were ready to assist Hannah as soon as she landed at the airport. So they were going to have to make that death notification to her, which was going to be a very extremely sensitive thing, considering what she'd just been through. And just imagine, like, yourself, if you were in this position, like what you just went through, that trauma, and now you're in need of clothes, you're in need of food, you really are in need of sleep. And that's just basic needs as a minimum. You really have to take care of a victim's basic needs first, before you start jumping on them, asking all kinds of questions and expecting them to answer your questions.
But they knew when they stopped at the, when they dropped down at the hospital with, you know, you knew the media was going to be all over the place, and somebody probably would shout out, Hannah, something about her mother. And so they had to tell her before she ran into that situation.
Well, I mean,
I'd want, yeah, I'd want them, exactly. I would want them to tell me before I get to a hospital and have just some reporter tell me.
Right. Well, I know that it was a big effort to keep the media away, to be aware of any TVs on that were in the hospital, and making sure that a well-meaning person, even at the hospital, like a nurse or someone, wasn't going to inadvertently say something to Hannah before she could, they could do the notification. Because the whole country, like you said, knew that her family was dead. And victim services just had to help her cope with the devastating loss of her mother and her brother, and dealing with those terrifying days and nights with her captor. And so it is so important for a victim to be linked immediately with the victim specialist or advocate. And statistics show that it really improves the healing for the victim. I mean, getting those services right away on board, feeling safe, which is the number one thing victims want, is to want to feel safe. And so this went a long ways to helping Hannah with her healing.
So, Taryn, what happened to the cat?
Very good question. I mean, of course, you know, after all of this story here, you have to ask what happened to the cat, of course. The hostage rescue team did retrieve the cat, and they took photos with the cat and then put, I mean, who wouldn't want to pose with that cool cat that's made it how many miles?
Yeah, deep into the wilderness, you know, next to a mountain and a lake. Absolutely.
And a pedophile. Yeah. So that is, a cat's a big survivor. So the next day, the agents actually brought the cat to Hannah, but doesn't sound like she wanted that cat. It had been DiMaggio's and was eventually returned to his family. And I can imagine how terrible it would have been, maybe. I mean, not, I'm sure she wouldn't blame the cat, but that's a terrible reminder of what happened.
Yeah.
Well, to add to the weirdness of the story, Jim DiMaggio's father, who's also named James DiMaggio, kidnapped and held another 16-year-old girl who was the daughter of a former girlfriend and held her captive.
No. No way.
And held her captive in 1989. And the victim, now grown, and when she was grown, gave an interview to CNN. And she said, quote, "I asked him not to kill us. And he said, don't worry, you won't feel a thing," end quote.
Wow.
So it gets even weirder. She escaped. Jim Sr. did go to jail, but I don't think it was for very long because this gal, whose name we don't know, which is fine because we don't need to know her name. She attended, it just so happened, the same high school as Jim Jr., the one we've been talking about this whole story. So they went to high school together.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So this victim
went on. So she knew him.
She knew Senior and Junior.
And Junior, yeah.
And Senior, you know, tried to kidnap her and hold her hostage. And Junior, the one we've been talking about this whole time, the victim went on to say, "I was walking to my locker and his son," referring to Jim Jr., said, quote, "my dad is out and said to let you know he'll be waiting for you after school," end quote.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's messed up.
That is messed up, yeah. Big time.
Well, eventually Jim Sr. died by suicide. And to be exact, Jim DiMaggio's father took a fatal drug overdose August 10th, 1998, 15 years to the day before an FBI agent killed his son in the Frank Church Wilderness, freeing another 16-year-old girl.
Wow, isn't that weird? That is a twist.
That's a twist. And is that what people call a generational curse?
I don't know.
Or just an apple doesn't
fall. Messed up.
Yeah, or is it just an apple tree thing?
Apples and trees, yes.
I did see in one article that the fact that those horse riders actually saw Hannah with her captor was like one in a trillion chance or something. Which I don't know. I don't believe that statistic because those other people saw them too that they reported at the trailhead. So they were seen, but it was a really needle in a haystack kind of situation. They could have gone on for a very long time and not be seen. And I don't know what would have happened at that point because of, I don't know how they were going to survive with what they had. But, you know, thank goodness for that horse group and the deputy sheriff. Maybe he was the one that really was able to pay attention.
And it just comes back to that old adage, you know, that people hear all the time. If you see something, say something. Because you never know if it's going to save somebody's life or help somebody out. And, you know, and you look at all the, you talk about a needle in a haystack.
Right.
You know, the timing of them, the horse people meeting them on the trail, and then them getting out and seeing all the on TV, on the media, seeing about the Amber Alert and seeing the signs. I mean, you know, it's just timing on all of that stuff.
Right, right. You know, the other thing I thought was very good on the part of the riders, and I know they were all armed, as they said in one of the reports where they were interviewed. That was also a very dangerous, potentially dangerous situation. And the fact that they didn't call him out on, hey, you don't know where you're going, or really question him other than, you know, just polite things to say. We don't know what would have happened to them because DiMaggio didn't have a problem killing a mom and a small child in a horrific way. He sure wouldn't have had a problem shooting at some of those riders.
Oh, yeah. Somebody. I mean, he did that to people he knew.
Right.
So I agree. I think, you know, to do something to those riders, he probably wouldn't have thought twice about that.
Right. Don't engage unless there's an emergency and get out and contact law enforcement if something is strange to you. Doesn't look right. Mm-hmm. If it just don't look right. Yep. JDLR.
Just JDLR. Just doesn't look right.
Right. Well, 10 years later, all reports are that Hannah has a family and is doing well, has a job, and looking forward to the future. So I guess that's the silver lining of the story. I mean, how horrific to lose basically your whole family.
Right.
Well, that was a pretty heavy case. And even Nancy and I were talking before this, and Nancy's like, do we really want to do this? Because it was really hard to read and research. So I think maybe, Nancy, can you want to change our brains a little bit? Do you have anything lighter so we can end this podcast on something light?
Okay, I've got one. So I was reading some Yelp reviews on national parks and which parks got a 1-star rating. Mm-hmm. One of them that stuck out in my mind was Death Valley. And this guy was talking about that it was awful and he was bored and it looked like a moonscape. You know, it was just all dried up dirt and rocks. And it made me laugh because I went there to Death Valley National Park. And, you know, for me, it was only 101 degrees right. when I went. But, you know, perhaps this guy, it was 121 degrees or something like that. So he was hot and bothered and frustrated. But I thought I can understand where he's coming from. But, you know, you do need to get out and look at the sights and things like that. So
well, exactly.
I would not have given it a 1, but he did make me laugh.
he probably should have paid attention to the name of the national park, Death Valley. I don't think I would go there thinking it was all tulips and lavender fields.
Well, and, you know, and elk and buffalo. Yeah, you're not going to find any of that in Death Valley.
So. No.
But anyway, that guy made me laugh.
Cool. All right, that's all we have for today. So stay safe out in wild places, everybody, and watch out for the company you keep.
And if you see something, say something.
Thank you.